Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 50. I am super excited about today's episode as we have a very special guest who many of you have spoken with via your mobile devices over the years. But today we have the opportunity to take a real behind-the-scenes look at the journey of Susan Bennett, also known as the original voice of Siri.
It is my absolute pleasure to have you join us here today. So thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome.
So Susan, what we would love to know is a story of how it is you once saw the future before you decided to begin branding yourself and building out your business, before you became a voiceover actress, before you were, you know, known as Siri, what did you think the future was going to look like?
Well, it depends on what point you're starting from, I guess. In college, I was very, very confused. I've always been a musician, a singer, and keyboard player, and I did a lot of acting in college. And I didn't really think, you know, that that was something you could make, you know, a living doing. And so I hadn't really thought much about that. But I knew some of the things that I did not want to do just because of my personality, my nature, and my likes and dislikes. I couldn't picture myself in an office. And so I really didn't have any thoughts of, you know, especially any entrepreneurial thoughts, because I came from a pretty modest family and just really didn't, my mind didn't work that way. I was, you know, I had more of a musician's mind, I guess. And I was fortunate enough that I decided to get married. I found the person that I loved, and fortunately he was a professional athlete, and so we were able to get by on what he was making. And so being involved with him allowed me a lot of extra time to contemplate, to test things out,
right,
and see what I wanted to do. And for many years, you know, I guess I've always been and still am a freelancer. And so I guess that my business is such. You know, I'm just a freelance voiceover and singer. And, you know, that's my brand.
Excellent. So back before you got married, you were in high school, you were a musician, you weren't really thinking of an entrepreneurial journey, but when you had the opportunity to take that time, you began freelancing and working with the, you know, working as a voiceover actress. Now, did you go about becoming a voiceover actress with an agent, or was this something that, you know, you just kind of went out and did interviews or auditions and things of that sort?
Well, I got into voiceover accidentally, really. So much has happened in my life that's been fortuitous, just you know, serendipitously, just without my really knowing it was happening. In my job as a singer and musician, I used to do a lot of jingles back in the day when there would be groups of people gathered around a microphone singing jingles. And one day the voice talent didn't show up to read the donut of the jingle. So the studio owner said, "Susan, you don't have an accent. Come over here and read this copy." And so I did, and I realized that it was something I could do fairly naturally. And I thought, oh boy, I can do this. This could be a whole other offshoot of the singing career. And so I got a voice coach and eventually an agent and started working pretty quickly right after that.
That's awesome. And that's kind of what I was looking for. I thank you for that, because what I'm looking to do is pull out the piece of the story where you went from kind of doing the jingles and doing the day-to-day of your general work that you were doing as a freelancer to kind of beginning to build out that brand of yourself, honing your talent, recognizing that there was a talent that you had. And it's funny because there's many entrepreneurs who have mentioned to me, you know, throughout interview after interview, that their talent is actually brought to their attention by someone else. Much like with your story where, you know, it just so happens that you were great at reading the copy that someone else didn't show up to read that day. And just by chance, you happened to recognize that there was something more there that you could kind of hone and work with and move forward with. So once you did begin, you know, taking those steps with the voice coach and finding an agent, what do you find was the most difficult part of kind of breaking into that industry of voiceover acting?
To tell you the truth, it almost seemed like kismet or destiny. I don't recall having a lot of difficulty. The difficulty in it is to just be really, really good at what you do, and so to work hard at it. So many times, especially now, voiceover has become a quote thing. In the past, when I would tell people that I was a voice actor, they'd say, "What's that?"
Right.
So everyone, because of technology and because of the fairly comparatively inexpensive cost of a home studio these days, everyone wants to get in on the pick. Everyone wants to get in on it. Everyone wants to be a voiceover talent. But what they keep forgetting about just life in general is that you have to be good at what you're doing, and it takes time, it takes skill, it takes effort. And, you know, sometimes I think you talked earlier about luck and, you know, sometimes the people helping you on your way. When I do my Siri presentation, I like to talk about the fact that when I was a little kid, I had two favorite toys. One was a one-octave piano, and the other one was an operator's switchboard toy, which sounds just horrible, but it was, you know, it was the switchboard, and I would, you know, plug in the cables and pretend to answer the phone, pretend to be the operator. And, you know, how prescient is that, that I ended up being, you know, a singer and piano player and on just hundreds and hundreds of phone systems. So it makes you wonder about life, but that you whether you really are, whether it is just luck or if there's some sort of path there. But regardless, I do believe that in luck and the importance of luck. I don't know if you've ever seen a Woody Allen movie called Match Point. It's one of my favorite movies of his, and he starts off with the premise that people don't really give enough importance to the idea of luck. And the first scene is a tennis match, and the ball hits the top of the net and goes straight up. And he talks about the fact that, so what is going to determine who wins this game? You know, which way the ball falls? What's going to determine that? You know, a little bit of wind, you know, or luck? And then he proceeds to tell the story of this rather heinous character who just has the most amazing luck, despite the fact that he's not a good person. There are a lot of factors in play, and I think you mainly really have to invest in yourself, believe in yourself, which is sometimes difficult because we all have a tendency to want to compare ourselves to other people, and you really have to be careful doing that because, you know, I'm never going to look like, you know, Julie Roberts or have the talent of Meryl Streep. But it doesn't mean that I don't have a place in this world. And I think that's true for everyone. So you kind of have to get off your own back and put yourself in the trenches and go to work. Especially if there's something you specifically love to do. And no job, you know, are you going to love 100% of the time. But you really have to put in the time. You have to put in the time and you have to put in the effort.
Definitely. It takes commitment. And I think that, you know, one of those big recipes of, you know, having that passion, having the commitment and the willpower and just believing in yourself, having that positive mindset, and keeping those people around you that assist in maintaining that mindset is very key in terms of becoming successful.
I think that's true, but I think you have to be really careful about just all these aphorisms around, oh, well, think positively and everything will be okay. Well, you know, maybe eventually, and yes, in the big picture, it will all be okay, but you have to be sort of realistic, too. I think that if you have a passion, you know, maybe you have a passion for doing some odd thing. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to make a living at it. And so you have to sort of be a realist, and you may have to, you know, your time in the trenches may involve doing some, you know, menial job that you don't particularly like, but that pays the bills and allows you, you know, at least the wherewithal to have the time to spend on the thing that you really love. And, you know, if it isn't something that can, that you can make a living doing, that doesn't mean that you stop doing it. I think that's one of the really bad things about our culture is that, you know, money trumps everything. Money has just taken over. Money has become king in this country, and I just think it's so superficial. You know, it's trumped integrity, it's trumped creativity, it's just absolutely incredible that people just are so enthralled with money and having money. And I think that you have to try to look beyond that, because not all of us are going to end up with a lot of it. You know, exactly. It doesn't mean that we aren't going to have a good life. So fortunate doesn't necessarily mean having a fortune regarding money. It just means having a good life. And I think a good life is a balanced life.
Definitely. I love the way you put that, that, you know, being fortunate doesn't necessarily mean having a fortune. It's really living a good life, and it's important to make sure that you have a plan to pay those bills and have a plan to create the cash flow in whatever that passion or whatever that project is that you're looking to venture into. But definitely, you know, having the passion is not necessarily going to be the end all be all, nor is, you know, creating the cash flow. I think it's really a matter of creating that balance, like you said, Susan. That's a really important point. It's a matter of making sure that that balance is there in life. So regardless as to whether or not that passion project is generating an income, if that passion project is generating a lifestyle that makes you happy and that makes you enjoy life in general, that's more than enough for a lot of people in life, and it should be more than enough for a lot of people in life. What do you think prospective entrepreneurs should really take into consideration prior to venturing into any sort of project or any sort of entrepreneurial journey? What would you if you went back a couple of years, what's one thing that you wish someone had mentioned to you when you first started?
Well, that's a really difficult question to answer, because I never thought about it from an entrepreneurial perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, your audience is obviously, you know, people who are trying to get their own businesses started and that sort of thing. And I don't know that I'm really the person to ask about that. Basically, what I did was just as a freelancer, just try to be as good at my job as I could be. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's important to keep going back to being realistic. You know, you have to have the funds or figure out a way to get the funds. You have to really put in the work and the time and the effort, the commitment, as you said. You also have to reach out to people. And in this culture, with everything mostly being done by email, text, and Twitter and Facebook and those kinds of things, I think people lose sight of the fact that personal interaction can really make a big difference. Reaching out to a person and actually talking to them on the phone, how old school, I know, but and reaching out to people on a personal level, you know, if you do a job for someone and they were very pleased, you know, write them and thank them for the job, and they'll remember you for that. Little things like that you can put your personal touch on your prospective business.
Very much so. Very much so. I agree with that 100%. I think making sure that being personable when you're networking is something that has kind of fallen to the wayside. Everything has become rather mechanical and automated. And though that's a wonderful thing because, you know, technology creates equality, it really helps those who are not able to accomplish certain things, accomplish amazing things nowadays due to technology. But at the same time, it can become very stock oriented, you know, and computer driven. So I think that extra little touch is very nice. I know it's something that creates a memorable aspect to any interaction, much more so than a standard tweet or a text that
well,
goes out.
You also have to take into consideration that the tweets and, you know, any kind of thing that involves abbreviation, you're just basically getting the basic facts across and not much else. People forget how important the sound of the human voice is, and you can say a lot of subtle things with the inflection of a voice that you can't say just, you know, tapping at your keyboard. And so don't lose sight of that. I think we are losing that as we get more and more towards artificial intelligence and more, you know, of our jobs are being done by, you know, robots and and other types of machines. You have to remember how important the sound of the human voice is. It really is a major thing for human communication.
100%. It's funny the way you stated that. It brought back a memory of not too long ago, just this past fall, going to an orientation at my daughter's new school. And one of the courses that we were sitting through, one of the conversations was precisely that, the changes in inflection and voice and how it can, you know, completely change an entire phrase. And one of the phrases, I believe, was, "What are you doing?"
Right.
And the instructor had, you know, each of the students in the class go around and say it in a different manner and discuss the different meanings behind the different way each child stated those phrases. So no, it's very important inflection in the voice and communication between people. So I agree 100%. The human voice is extremely important when it comes to interaction, and that is definitely lost in the digital world to a certain extent.
Well, I think also the fact that our language is pretty much going away. It's changing so dramatically. And I really regret that. I know that as we move on and we go into the future and change is always a constant, one has to adapt and transition from what maybe we used to do to what we're doing now. But I think it's important, especially for young people who are not getting the same type of study in the English language that I got when I was in school. It's important to have, for example, I've been studying Spanish for a few years, and I just love it. It's very interesting. But what I found out is that you can't be as specific in Spanish as you can in English. One of those reasons is there are 225,000 words in Spanish. There are over a million words in English. So you can be as precise and descriptive as you could possibly want. And sometimes I think when you're just, you know, using abbreviations or you're just using catchphrases, you're not really completely expressing exactly what you want to say. And so I would encourage people to play with the language, learn some more vocabulary.
Susan, I love it.
You know, otherwise, then maybe you'd be able to talk like, well, you'd really like it a lot if you could find the word you were looking for. Now I'm starting to sound like a dinosaur, but I wear it proudly.
It's so cute. No, I agree 100%. You are absolutely lovely, Susan. And speaking of change, the show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for different companies or products in an industry that they may not have thought of before. And we would absolutely love to help you. So, Susan, if you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business, what would it be and why?
Boy. You know, at this stage of the game, I'm sure I'm a great deal older than most of your audience. So I have a different perspective on my business. I'm at this stage where, you know, I think there was a famous Helen Mirren quote on Facebook lately where she said she'd wished she'd said F you more often in her career. And, you know, when you reach a certain age, you kind of allow yourself to, you know, not actually say that to people, but think it to yourself and just politely say, you know, I don't think I want to do that. So I think for something to be successful, for people starting out and trying to build a business, it seems that just from the get-go, you should have some sort of idea what you like or what you're good at. And if those two things are a combination, that's a bonus. Starting with those things, you know, use the web. I mean, it's such an incredible research tool. Just look into things that could be a business related to the things that you like and want to accomplish. As you know, for me, I didn't really have a choice. It was sort of in the cards for me. I was heard playing my little toy piano at the age of 4 by a neighbor, and the neighbor called my parents and said, "I think you have a musical child." And this wonderful gentleman gave me his old upright piano, and I started taking piano lessons, and that was the beginning of that. So going back to the idea of luck, and this gentleman just happened to hear me playing by ear on my porch. And you should have some sort of sense, as I said, either something that you really, really love or something that you know you're good at. We're all good at something. And, you know, we've got, our culture is just so into the celebrity mode and everything. And I think people feel badly about themselves that, oh, they're not gorgeous, they can't be a model, or they're, you know, not this fabulous actor or something. You know, how about science? There you go. Talk about affecting a culture. You know, take something that you're really good at and figure out a way to make it work for you. Now, another thing to keep in mind, too, is that nothing happens overnight. You know, if it does happen overnight, it usually disappears. You know, it's something that you have to work towards, and that sometimes it may take years for you to settle in to find, you know, settle into the thing that's going to be your niche during, you know, your life. And also, it's not to say that can't change. I mean, there are some people that do a job. I met a woman recently that I did a documentary for. She's doing a documentary about older women and what they're doing in their lives. And she was in the corporate world and very successful in the corporate world. And she just got to a point, she said, you know, I want to be a director. I want to make documentaries. And so she did. She started doing it, just, you know, financing herself. Of course, as I said, she was very successful in the corporate world, so she had some of her own backing to work with. But, you know, I don't think there's any one hard, fast rule for anyone except work. work. And you've got to put in the time. It's not going to just suddenly happen.
Right, definitely. So I would say that your choice or your wish to change something would be to have maybe decided to not do certain aspects of voiceover work or certain aspects of the journey more often in the career, in your career. I guess I'm losing the.
Yeah, the magic wand thing is really tough for me because I can't imagine having, nothing more, I can't imagine having a better life. I've been so fortunate. I was able to find the things that I loved early, and I questioned that. I didn't think I was talented enough or good enough, but I just kept doing it because I was compelled to do it. And so if I were to have a magic wand for someone else, I would just say, wow, find that thing in yourself that defines you.
Definitely. Okay. So then I would say that maybe what we'll do is rewind the clock and let you relive it all for 20 years and just enjoy it again. There we go. I love it, Susan. You've been absolutely wonderful, and I truly appreciate you sharing with the audience today. Please share the best way. I mean, we can all reach you on our cell phones and iPads daily, but share the best way for our listeners to find Susan.
Well, probably the best thing to do is to reach me through my website, which is SusanCBennett.com, and Bennett has two N's and two T's. You can contact me on Twitter, but I have a lot of followers, and so it's tough for me to keep up with everyone there. So it's probably best to reach me through my email on my website. But my Twitter handle is at Seriously Susan, SiriouSly. And Facebook, I just basically keep for people that I know personally. So once again, it's probably best to just reach me through my personal email on my website.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link to that through the show notes page. And Susan, just thank you once again for sharing today.
You're so welcome. I enjoyed it.
Have some idea as to what it is you're good at, but be realistic. Then feel free to reach out to Susan at SusanCBennett.com. You can always reach her through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/Susan Bennett. Susan, thank you once again for joining us today. We truly appreciate you sharing with the audience and techie community. Thank you guys for checking out episode number 50. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.